Timothy, do you copy? Michael mumbled into the black bead of his mic.
He's not coming back for us, Magnolia said. Give it a rest, Commander.
I never trusted him, Layla added from her perch in the stern of their kayak.
You're supposed to be sleeping, Michael said.
Layla looked over her shoulder.
The thunder kind of makes that impossible, Tin.
The storm continued to rage overhead, its nearly constant lightning illuminating the way as they paddled across the swamps.
You got eyes on anything, Roger? Michael asked quietly.
Michael scanned the water looking for the snake-like beasts they had spotted several times throughout their journey. So far, the creatures had left the divers alone, but it was only a matter of time before one of them grew brazen enough to attack.
I don't see anything, Roger said. This place is terrible, and no matter what I do, I can't get the stink out of my helmet.
Well, that's not this place, Magnolia joked. It's you.
Ha! He replied. The Rajman smells fantastic.
Referring to himself in the third person was a nervous tic that Michael had noticed Roger doing more and more when he got embarrassed or scared. As with so much of Roger's personality, Michael couldn't decide whether it was endearing or annoying.
Hold us steady for a few minutes, Rajman, Michael ordered.
Roger stopped paddling and checked the rope connecting the boats while Michael pulled out a map and compass. His eyes flitted from the tools to the mini-map in the upper screen of his HUD.
We're about 17 miles from the source of X's last transmission, Michael said after a few minutes. At this pace, it's going to take us at least another day to get there if we can't find land.
My hands are already covered in blisters, Roger said.
I'll take over, Magnolia said, sitting up.
She stretched her arms and reached back for the paddle, but Roger held it out of her reach. Michael's eyes were drawn to a ripple of water to the right of the boats. A long, sinuous shape breached the surface before vanishing back into the soup.
Everyone quiet, Michael said.
He gently placed the paddle back in the boat and grabbed his rifle. The weapon was already charged and ready to fire, saving him the trouble of pulling back the bolt. He slowly scanned the water in all directions. Another humpbacked body appeared on their left.
We're being surrounded, he murmured.
He flashed several hand motions, and the divers held their weapons at the ready, covering all quarters.
Timothy, this is Commander Everhart reporting our coordinates.
Michael continued to relay the information to the AI just in case he was listening. Water slurped against the sides of the boats as lightning rippled across the sky, backlighting more spurs of land that spread across the horizon. The earthquakes had turned most of Florida into wetlands and provided a home to a type of beast Michael had never seen before. Something darted through the water in front of Layla. She flinched and trained her gun on the ripples.
Hold your fire, Michael whispered.
He heard another beast behind their boats, but didn't look in time to see it. The wake from the creature's movements hit the side of the boats, rocking them and pushing them slightly through the murky water. Roger let out a high-pitched yelp as a red tail suddenly shot out of the water and wrapped around him. It yanked him backward, but his knee caught on the stern. Magnolia reached for his legs and grabbed hold while Michael aimed at the ropey coils looped around Roger's neck. Roger dropped his pistol, the weapon clanking on the bottom of the boat as he reached up to grab the beast.
Use your blades, Layla said to Magnolia.
Before Michael could fire a shot, another snake emerged from the water. An elongated skull on a thick neck tilted to look at Layla and Michael in turn, studying them as a sharp black tongue flickered out at them. Spikes flared around its head, forming a crown. Michael fired a round point-blank to the center of its head right between the almond-shaped eyes. The impact flung the creature back into the water. Roger let out a scream as a second snake cinched around his arm and tried to drag him out of the kayak. The beast pulled hard enough to yank both boats backward, and the rope between them fell slack. Layla reached out to grab it as a third snake wrapped around the front of her boat, yanking it in the opposite direction.
Fire!
Michael shouted. Anger boiled through him, giving his fatigued muscles a new surge of energy. While Layla hacked at the snake holding on to the bow, he turned and fired two shots into the closest snake, pulling Roger toward the water. The rounds cut through the rubbery flesh, nearly severing the head. Roger let out a wail.
Don't shoot me, shoot him!
Michael aimed carefully and pulled the trigger at the body still holding on to Roger. The round sliced through the stringy flesh, and Roger jolted forward with a length of red-orange tail still wrapped around him. Magnolia, both blades out, whirled to strike the beast at the bow of Layla and Michael's boat. Together they cut through its coils, leaving the front of the blue boat covered in gore and slick blood. The serpentine bodies undulated up and down in the water around the divers. Michael followed one in his sights and fired a 3-round burst, sending the creature back under the surface. As he scanned the water around them for another target, a snake burst up from the deep and curled around his chest. Its face loomed right in front of his visor, the halo of spikes flicking up around its head as it opened its mouth and let out a loud hiss. The creature's tongue flickered over his visor, obscuring his view with gooey saliva. Layla was screaming Michael's name, but he didn't have the breath to reply. He tried to squirm, but the motion just made the coils wrap tighter around his chest, arms, and stomach. A whipping sound emerged in the distance that sounded almost like flapping wings. Or was it just in his mind? Layla disappeared from view as he was yanked backward, out of the boat. The snake pulled him deep into the murky swamp, tightening its grip around his body so he couldn't even squirm. Water churned inside his helmet. It smelled awful and tasted worse. He spat it out, trying his best not to swallow any.
"Help!"
he shouted into the comm. Static crackled in reply. He could see the lightning flash above and the outlines of the two boats, but the darkness quickly surrounded him as the snake writhed deeper into the water. There wasn't much he could do now. The creature had him wrapped so tightly he couldn't even squirm. The farther downward he was pulled, the more he didn't want anyone risking their lives saving him.
"Stay put!" he yelled into the comms. "Tin!"
Layla's voice crackled back. Michael closed his eyes, focusing on the memory of her face. If he was going to die in a fetid, stinking swamp, at least his last thoughts would be of something beautiful.
"I love you,"
Michael choked. The water bubbled over his mouth and nose as he was pulled into the darkness. 15. 1 year and 9 months earlier. X knew he was close to death. He had been here several times before, teetering on the edge between life and whatever came after. But of all the threats he had faced over the years, diving through electrical storms, battling stone beasts, and running from sirens, cancer was the last thing he ever thought would finally get him. Miles sat by his side as X lay on the mattress in the small apartment. Dogs were magnificent creatures, especially Miles. He could sense pain, smell adrenaline, hunt in almost total darkness, and had saved X from countless monsters over the years. X wished he could squeeze out a few more years with his best friend. He would even take a few extra months or weeks, despite the pain of the cancer eating at his throat. He remembered watching a woman slowly die from the same kind of cancer. She had long red hair and was dressed all in white. For some reason, thinking about her made him angry. Had the woman betrayed him? He couldn't recall anymore. All his memories were nothing but dust and ash. Ash. Was that the woman's name? Had she been the one who left him here to die? X let the fragment of memory go. It didn't matter now who had betrayed him. The only steadfastly loyal creature in his entire life was a dog. X looked over at Miles, sleeping with his head on his paws. An eyelid flickered open, exposing a blue eye. The dog closed it again, going back to sleep. He had taken every measure to see that Miles lived on after X succumbed to the cancer, but there simply wasn't enough food and water to leave behind for the dog. Without him, Miles would die within weeks. The thought broke his heart. Miles had been created by the same short-sighted fools who blew up the planet, making it impossible for even a genetically engineered superdog to survive here. It was a cruel twist of fate.
"I'm sorry, boy,"
he whispered. He lifted his hand to pet Miles, even as pain racked his body. The survival instinct that had kept him moving all these years was slowly fading away, but it was still there, like old muscle, and a part of him didn't want to give up. He carefully stripped the blanket off his half-naked body and gritted his cracked teeth as he sat up. His muscles strained and clenched beneath the scarred flesh. His clothes, radiation suit, and diving armor rested on a chipped dresser across the room. The remains of a mirror were piled neatly beside the door, where Miles wouldn't step on them. X was glad he couldn't see his own face in the mirror. Miles jumped up with X and followed him over to the dresser, wagging his tail. He nudged up against X's tattered pant leg and licked at the bottom of his hand. X crouched down, doing his best to hold in a cough. He stroked the husky's thick coat, and its tail beat the air harder. Then he straightened and grabbed a long-sleeved shirt off the dresser. He wasn't going to die today. Today they were going outside to look at the ocean. It was the reason X had fought so hard to get here, to see a place like the one in his old picture. X pulled on his shirt and then helped Miles into his suit. The dog's tail wagged again in eagerness. They had spent the past few days sitting in the cramped, cold apartment listening to the otherworldly calls of monsters outside. After X finished securing Miles in his helmet, he reached for his own gear. A tickle in his throat heralded a cough. Lungs crackling, he tried to massage his burning throat. But that didn't work, and he doubled over to cough up bloody spittle. The violent fit left him exhausted. He grabbed a bottle off the floor and forced the cool water down, though it did little to soothe his throat. Miles gave a whine and nudged up against his leg. He knew that X was sick. If X could speak, he would reassure the dog, but a pat on the head would have to do. When X finally felt steady enough to move again, he wiped his bloody lips on his sleeve and finished putting on his radiation suit. Reaching for his helmet, he hesitated. Why put it on? Why not see the world with naked eyes? The bloody phlegm on the floor proved he was as good as dead anyway. But the mission that had brought him here was finally complete. He had reached the ocean. He staggered out of the bedroom and into the central room. It was furnished with four chairs, a dining table, and the boxes of supplies X had carried up to the 24th floor of the high-rise overlooking the city once known as Miami. His rifle rested against the wall. He grabbed it on his way over to the plastic sheeting that covered the broken balcony door. Miles whined and pawed at his leg. X tried to speak, but what came out was a raspy whisper. He reached for his throat and closed his eyes as he swallowed. The pain was intense, as if he were swallowing molten lava. Not even the painkillers helped anymore. He pulled the industrial tape away from the double layer of plastic sheeting and led Miles out onto the platform. Their apartment had a magnificent view of what had once been a beautiful skyline. He imagined this was where the old world equivalent of upper deckers had lived in wealth and privilege. While most of the city had been leveled by the bombs, signs of Earth's former glory were everywhere. The condo where he had taken refuge was littered with fancy furniture and other relics of the past. In the kitchen, he had found dozens of plates and cups, all pure white and so thin he could almost see through them, and a drawer full of silverware that gleamed after he cleaned it. X could picture the previous occupants sitting at the table to eat dinner as a family. Compared to what little he remembered of his life aboard the airship, the people here had lived in almost unimaginable luxury. He approached the metal railing to look east, where the ocean lapped at the shoreline. The chilly wind rustled his thinning hair as he raised the binos. He tried to picture the bright sun the way it must have been, the golden glow warming his skin. He imagined the palm trees waving in the wind, and the teal water lapping onto the beach. He had seen a picture like that years ago, an image his mind became obsessed with during his journey, before it burned in his journal. But all he saw now were the poisonous weeds and carnivorous trees growing along the beach, and the cold gray water breaking on trash-littered sand. Instead of the sun, the never-ending storm brewed overhead, shitting lightning over the ruined city. Much of the ancient metropolis was flooded by 10 to 20 feet of water, and many of the buildings were nothing more than twisted steel and chunks of concrete. He couldn't see it from here, but 20 miles past the fence of half-destroyed scrapers was a bowl of water 100 feet deep, the result of the bomb that had leveled Miami. The radiation in sections of the city was at red zone levels, and he had driven the motorcycle as fast as possible over the bridge to get clear of it. X knew this landscape like the back of his hand. Staring out from the balcony had been his entertainment since he arrived here several months ago. His favorite sight was the fishing ship stuck horizontally between two apartment buildings. Thick purple vines with barbed suckers hung like octopus arms out of a jagged hole in the side of the hull. Despite all odds, the ship had remained here over all these years, keeping the structures from toppling. It was a miracle any of the buildings were still standing, a true testament to human engineering. The apartment he now stood in was missing its left wall, which had been blown away by the heat wave from the nuclear explosion. The steel struts still held the structure together like a spine keeping a skeleton from falling to pieces. He looked back to the coast, where another of his favorite landmarks stood in the field of destruction. The lighthouse with a red dome was the flame of Miami, a bright pop of color in a gray world. The bottom third of the stone structure was submerged in water, but it was still standing. He zoomed in on the windowless observation tower at the top. A red metal railing surrounded the platform that hadn't been used in over 2.5 centuries. The trees and bushes on the beach suddenly lit up, their limbs flashing pink. He zoomed in to see a siren munching on the foliage. In a matter of seconds, an entire section of coastline lit up like an emergency light as more of the sirens joined the feast, ripping and tearing the vines. The plants were no doubt fighting back with venomous barbs and suckers. As he watched, another cough brewed inside his chest. He forced saliva down his tight throat and fought the wave of fatigue sweeping over him. Just a few minutes of standing out here had taken so much out of his body. He stepped away from the railing, preparing to go inside and lie down, but halted when he saw shadowy figures flapping across the skyline. Miles saw them too. The dog bared his teeth but held back a growl. He slowly retreated into the apartment with his tail between his legs, eyes on X as if to say, "Let's go, old man." But instead, X stayed to watch the beasts streaming out of the destroyed roof of a building on the other side of the city. From this distance, they looked like bats fluttering into the air with their long, featherless wings. He knew that the longer he stayed out here, the more radiation he would take in, but it didn't matter now. Instead, he watched an aberrant branch of human evolution flock over a city that had once been home to mankind. The sirens were coming from the ITC facility across the city. They may have evolved to survive in these conditions, but they hadn't the intelligence of a human being. At least not that he could see. They didn't build things or create anything. Their instincts were basic and predatory. X supposed that was the point, but he couldn't escape the irony. The corporation that had tried to save humanity had doomed it instead. They had created the monsters that killed the survivors on the surface. There was one final hope for X. Inside the facility were cancer drugs that could save his life. They were rare, and X had seen them only on one dive long ago. Journeying to one of these secured facilities was in itself a death sentence. And how could he ever fight dozens of the beasts in his current condition? He could hardly get out of bed without feeling dizzy. X was done fighting. He should just let the disease run its course. It wouldn't be too much longer. Gripping the railing, he continued to watch the beasts circling the city, hunting for their next mutant meal. Their hellish wails grew closer, and he finally stepped back inside the apartment. Miles was waiting for him inside, his blue eyes filled with concern. He rushed over and pressed against X's legs. "You can't give up," X thought. "Miles needs you." He closed the sheets and sealed the tape. Winded, he took a seat in a chair facing the supply boxes. He opened the medical crate and pulled out a small box of syringes. Inside was medicine that would get him where he needed to go. or it might stop his heart for good. A shot would keep him moving for several hours and could provide him with enough energy to get to the ITC facility and fight the sirens. But this trip was too dangerous to take Miles with him. He leaned down to take off the dog's helmet. Then he kissed the husky's soft fur and hugged him for several minutes, feeling Miles's heart beating and his sides rising and falling with steady breaths.
"I love you, boy,"
X mumbled in a faint, scratchy voice. He stood and grabbed his helmet, put it on, and secured it with a click. Then he gathered his supplies and weapons. When he was ready, he pulled back one glove, exposing a vein in his filthy arm. He inserted the tip of the syringe into the vein and pushed the liquid into his body. A wave of heat washed over him. He grabbed two more of the syringes and then set off down the staircase to the garage below, where the bike waited.
"Time to live or time to die," he thought. "Time to fight one more time."
Present day. "We have a confirmed KIA, sir," Hunt whispered to Jordan. The captain stood on the bridge of the Hive with his hands on the yoke steering wheel. The news wasn't surprising, but he gave a rueful nod to keep up appearances.
"Tragic. But just the one death?" Jordan asked, playing the part.
He kept his eyes on the wall-mounted monitor. Storm clouds moved across the screen, and lightning rick-racked through the darkness.
"As far as we know, sir," Hunt replied. "I'll go talk to Ensign Ryan to see if he has more information."
Jordan listened to the Exo's footsteps clanking up the rungs. He closed his eyes for a moment, trying to picture Katrina in the medical ward. Deep down beneath the anger, he still loved her. He wanted to go to her, to comfort her and mourn the loss of their child.
"No, she betrayed you."
His job was to keep the ship running. His life was his work. He breathed a long sigh. "Electrical disturbances are making communication with the surface impossible right now, sir," Hunt reported when he returned. "Tom Price's beacon went off during the dive. We're not sure what happened." Jordan nodded and looked to the weather data screen.
"That storm is growing stronger," he said. "I want an estimate of when it's going to hit us."
"Yes, sir," Hunt replied. Jordan went back to studying the storm on the monitor at the front of the room. The cameras positioned on the stern, hull, and bow of the Hive provided a glimpse of the skies from every direction. A bulging cloud flashed lightning on the horizon. If he steered too close, the strikes would tear through the synthetic hide of the airship and could even puncture a gas bladder.
"Ascend to 22,000 feet," Jordan ordered.
Hunt cleared his throat.
"Sir, that will take us out of broadcast range. We'll lose contact with the dive team."
"That won't matter if there's no ship for them to return to, will it, Lieutenant?"
After a short pause, Hunt shook his head.
"No, it will not, sir."
"Give me full power to the turbofans," Jordan said. "I'm bringing us to safe altitude."
"Aye, aye, Captain."
A slight jolt rocked the bridge as the ship began to climb through the clouds. Pockets of turbulence rattled the bulkheads, but the massive beetle-shaped Hive powered through, just as it always had and always would. Jordan slowly turned the oak wheel, watching the front monitor for any sign of a rogue storm cloud that the sensors and cameras might have failed to detect. Just when he thought things were running smoothly, a raised voice came from the top of the bridge.
"We've got a problem in Compartment 9.
Jordan's earpiece crackled a beat later.
"Captain, this is Sergeant Jenkins. Do you copy?"
"Copy," Jordan replied. "What is it?"
"Over 24 lower deckers have gathered outside the trading post," Jenkins said. "Several of them are armed with knives."
"What do they want?"
"Your head, sir," Jenkins said. "Listen to this."
The radio crackled with static, followed by angry shouts.
"We want a new captain! We want a new captain! We want a new captain!"
Jordan's face burned with anger. He gripped the wheel harder and jerked it hard to the left, jolting the ship. A warning sensor flicked on, spreading a swirling red light over the clean white bridge. Several officers cried out in alarm.
"Sir!"
Hunt yelled.
"They want a new captain?" Jordan said through clenched teeth.
"Tell them to get to their fucking stations."
Before Jenkins could respond, Jordan heard another voice from the crowd.
"Katrina DeVita for captain!" someone yelled.
Jordan ground his teeth. Why bother trying to save these people when they were so stupid?
"Because it's your duty," he said out loud.
Looking over his shoulder, he found Lieutenant Hunt.
"I want everyone to get to their assigned shelters now!"
"Understood, sir," Hunt said, though his face had gone white. The klaxon rang out, echoing through the entire ship. If the militia couldn't get the crowds under control, then Jordan would force them into submission.
"Jenkins, report to the bridge," Jordan ordered.
He continued to steer the ship through the clouds, climbing higher and higher, away from the storm. When they were at 22,000 feet, he put the system on autopilot.
"We'll move back into broadcast distance once the storm passes," he said as he walked away. "Until then, bother me only if there's an emergency."
Jordan loped up the stairs, avoiding the gazes of his crew. He retreated to his office and flipped on a single light over the bulkhead. The book Hunt had given him from the raid on the library sat on his desk. He took off the sword, plopped down in his chair, and pulled the book into the light. At first glance, the red and black binding of the hardcover book didn't appear to be anything special. He rotated it to read the title, ITC Protocols. He thumbed through the yellow, dog-eared pages. 15 minutes into his search, he had found nothing of interest. What the hell was so important about this book? It read like an instruction manual on how to survive nuclear war. Before Jordan could read any further, a knock sounded on the hatch. Hunt entered the room, looking nervous.
"Sorry to bother you already, sir," he stuttered. "I wanted you to know the crowds have retreated to their assigned shelters."
Jordan nodded, but Hunt didn't leave.
"Well, what is it, Lieutenant?"
"That garbled transmission we picked up this morning. I think I found out who it is."
Jordan sat up straighter.
"And?" "It's Michael Everhart, sir. He's alive, and..."
Hunt shook his head incredulously.
"If I'm not mistaken, he's trying to hail another airship."
Jordan slowly stood at his desk.
"The Hive isn't alone, sir," Hunt continued. "Captain Everhart has found a ship called Deliverance."
16. Limp and pale, Michael lay on the cargo bay floor while Layla sobbed by his side. Magnolia leaned in for another breath while Roger pushed down on the commander's chest. Working together, they were doing everything they knew to save his life after pulling him from the swamp. His crushed armor lay in a heap on the floor.
"Please, please let him be okay," Layla cried.
She shook Michael's arm.
Tin, wake up."
The glow from Timothy's hologram illuminated the scene. Magnolia still couldn't believe it, but the AI had flown the ship low over the water to save them. If not for that, Michael would be dead.
"He is dead," Magnolia realized.
They had pulled him from the water nearly 5 minutes after the snake hauled him out of the boat. Not long after, Michael had lost consciousness, and then he had stopped breathing altogether.
"Hold on," Timothy said.
The bulkheads and floor rattled as the ship accelerated. He was taking them back to the original LZ, but they were smack in the middle of a storm. Magnolia prepared to give Michael another breath, but it caught in her chest. She couldn't believe it. After everything, they were heading right back to square one. Their short journey had come at a terrible cost.
"Come on,"
Roger muttered as he doggedly continued the chest compressions. Magnolia breathed into Michael's mouth again, and Roger pushed down on his chest. They continued trying to resuscitate him, but it didn't seem to be doing any good. Layla grabbed Michael's hand and squeezed, tears flowing down her cheeks. She leaned down and whispered something into his ear. The white illumination from Timothy's hologram vanished as the ship continued to pick up speed. The liftgate door had sealed shut, locking them inside. Outside the portholes, lightning flashed like a hand reaching out for the ship. Magnolia flinched as a bolt struck the overhead. The raucous crack boomed like a blaster shot. She hit the floor hard, but fought her way back to Michael and breathed air into his lungs. "Warning. Power surge detected," announced a female voice over the PA system. Magnolia focused on Michael. There wasn't anything she could do right now to fix the ship. Their fate was in Timothy's hands. A terrifying notion. She trusted the AI more than she trusted Jordan, but that wasn't saying much.
"Come on, Tin," Magnolia whispered before giving him another breath.
Had his eyelids just flickered? Roger pushed down one more time, and Michael's pale lips parted, disgorging a stream of water that smelled like raw sewage. Magnolia moved back to give him room and waved Roger off.
"Tin," Layla said frantically. "Tin, are you okay?"
"Are you ever going to stop calling me that?"
Michael rumbled. He reached up and swiped a curtain of soaking hair out of his face. Layla gave a laugh of pure joy and bent down to wrap her arms around him.
"Let him breathe,"
Roger said.
"Sorry,"
she said, pulling back. Michael managed to put an arm around her.
Where am I?"
"Deliverance," Roger said.
"What? How?"
Michael asked. He blinked rapidly, as if struggling to focus on the faces around him. Then he suddenly leaned over and vomited up more water.
"Ugh,"
he said, wiping his mouth.
"We gave you something to make you puke," Layla said. "Now drink this syrup. It'll kill whatever nastiness is still in you."
No sooner had Michael glugged down the beaker of clear liquid than a violent jolt rocked the divers, tossing them across the floor. Magnolia slid away from the others, reaching out for something to hold on to, but finding nothing. She crashed into a bulkhead with a thump that took the air from her lungs.
"Warning, threat level critical," announced the same monotone female voice.
"Timothy!"
Magnolia shouted. "I'm working to address the issue," he replied calmly over the PA. His voice had returned to the same smooth, calculated tone that Magnolia remembered from their first meeting back at the Hilltop Bastion. After his earlier meltdown, she wasn't going to complain, but she hadn't forgotten that he'd almost killed them. The ship continued rocking, but it leveled out enough that she managed to get to her feet. Michael lay on his back a few feet away. Layla scrambled over to him. Another bolt of lightning blasted the hull. The klaxon screamed, and red lights flashed from recesses in the ceiling. The swirling colors spread through the cargo hold as if a portal from hell had opened. Roger put his hands on his ears, rocking back and forth.
"Threat level critical," the dry female voice repeated. "Please move to your designated shelter."
Magnolia helped Roger up and followed Michael and Layla toward the row of safety harnesses hanging from the bulkhead. Quakes shook the floor, throwing them all off balance. Deliverance continued picking up speed, the thrusters propelling them downward through the storm clouds. This baby was way faster than the Hive, at least. Magnolia couldn't help but marvel at the ship's technological superiority. The Hive would already have crashed and shattered on the surface, but Deliverance kept flying through the onslaught of lightning. Michael was first to the harnesses. Layla helped him strap in as his hands fumbled at the buckles. Roger and Magnolia were next. She took the harness on the far right, which gave her a view out the porthole. A wave of water splashed over the hull, spraying brown mist into the air as the ship lowered even farther.
"Holy shit,"
she said, hardly able to hear her own voice over the screaming siren.
"Hold on, everyone," Timothy said over the PA system.
Magnolia grabbed the harnesses and gritted her teeth. Loose armor rolled and clattered over the metal floor. Michael's helmet smashed into a bulkhead, but the visor, built to handle blunt force impacts, remained intact. Thunder boomed like a grenade exploding. The vibration rattled Magnolia's bones, and her face shook from the G-forces. It felt a lot like diving through a storm.
I think I'm gonna puke too,"
Roger said.
"Yep, exactly like diving."
Magnolia looked out the porthole to her right. The ship lowered again, giving her an even better view of the water. They skimmed the surface, leaving a frothy white wake in the brown water. She closed her eyes, trying to keep her stomach down.
"Almost clear," Timothy announced.
The ship groaned as every strut and bulkhead flexed with the strain. They were going to break apart. She knew it. When her eyes opened again, Magnolia could see terra firma below. The ship rocketed over an island, leaving both the swamp and the worst of the storm behind. 10 consecutive thunderclaps sounded in the distance as if the storm were applauding their escape. She took a deep breath and relaxed in her harness.
"This shit never ends," she muttered.
Timothy's hologram reemerged in the center of the small cargo hold, his hands clasped behind his back. Michael coughed again and spat on the ground.
"How in the hell did you find us?"
"I received your transmissions but was unable to reply due to the electrical interference. I traced your last SOS. It appears I found you right in the..."
He paused and brought a finger to the bottom of his close-cropped beard.
"In the nick of time, I believe is how the phrase goes."
"All that matters is you came back for us," Roger said. "Thank you, Timothy."
The AI dipped his head politely.
"It is my pleasure."
"Yeah, thanks, Timothy," Michael said. "But we're not out of this just yet. Can you put together a damage report?"
He staggered across the hold to his helmet and armor. Layla held his arm to keep him steady. The klaxon had shut off, but the female voice continued to repeat, "Threat level critical."
"One moment," Timothy said.
"What are we supposed to do now?"
Magnolia asked as the hologram disappeared again.
"Let's wait to hear how bad the damage is before we start worrying about what to do next," Michael said.
"Several secondary systems are offline," Timothy announced. "Lightning strikes damaged the stern. Several areas require patching."
The divers gathered around their commander, looking to him for guidance, but he could hardly stand. Vomit stippled the front of his dented armor, and blood trickled from a cut on his forehead. His long hair was matted to his shoulders, and he reeked of sewage. As if all were just business as usual, he straightened and said, "Here's what we're going to do. Roger and Magnolia, patch the hull, while Layla and I work on getting the secondary systems online."
"And then what?" Roger asked.
Michael turned to him with a look that told Magnolia they were going to do something batshit crazy.
"We're going to fly this ship as low and as fast as possible until we get to X's signal, or until we crash."
Les Mitchells held a glove up to catch a snowflake drifting down from the swollen clouds. Lightning split the sky in a brilliant arc. By the time the flash faded away, the flake had melted.
"Never thought I would see snow," Jennifer said.
"Radioactive snow," Les replied.
He lowered his hand and checked his wrist monitor. The rads were in the yellow zone.
"Everyone keep an eye on your suit integrity monitor," Aaron said.
"I don't think my warming pads are working," Ty said. "I'm freezing."
Les checked the temperature reading on his HUD. 30 degrees and dropping by the minute.
"It's probably because you're as thin as a beanpole," Jennifer said.
"Shut up and keep moving," Ola snapped.
Aaron brought a finger to her helmet, shushing them. They had been following her across the barren wasteland for hours, stopping only to raid the supply crates and pick up gear. She moved slowly but without hesitation. Les was more grateful than ever to have an experienced leader on the team, but after seeing Tom die in the first few minutes of the mission, he was worried that Phoenix would end up like Aaron's old dive team. How many more of them would be killed down here? Ola grunted as he dragged the ski-mounted supply crates over the snow. So far, he seemed to be handling the plastic boxes fairly easily. There wasn't much inside, just the chutes and gear they had salvaged from Tom Price. Not that the stubborn militiaman would ever ask for help if they were too heavy. They were moving toward their target, an ITC installation deep underground. Aaron continued on point with the satellite dish from the supply crate strapped on her back. She cradled one of the two assault rifles. Les put his hand on the grip of his pistol for reassurance, hoping the cartridges would actually work if he ever had to fire the ancient weapon. He stumbled over a chunk of rubble.
"Stay sharp, giraffe."
He was still getting used to the night vision optics, and it was damned hard to see where he was going in the green-hued darkness. There was a reason people referred to the surface as hell. Human bones littered the ground almost everywhere they went. They were in some sort of industrial zone now, trekking around old-world vehicles that rose out of the snow. Some of them less recognized from picture books. Cranes, concrete trucks, bulldozers. Others looked like nothing he had ever seen before. The area had been largely spared from the nuclear fires, but the crumbling infrastructure had suffered in the harsh conditions of the intervening 2.5 centuries.
Most of the vehicles were pocked and riddled with holes, just like the decayed network of roads they had once been driven on. To the east, streets stacked one on top of another led to a wilderness of steel and concrete. A carpet of snow covered the dead city like a layer of skin. A skeletal arm protruded from a drift to his right, and even though it was ancient, Les checked for tracks. He saw nothing in the fresh powder aside from ski tracks and the boot prints of Aaron and the other divers ahead of him, but that didn't mean there weren't creatures out here. Hunting. Stalking. Watching. The divers halted at the edge of the industrial area when Aaron raised her fist. Another road snaked through several blocks of pockmarked brick buildings. Their roofs had given way to the weight of snow over the years, the rubble bulging out of missing windows like bread that had overflowed its pan. Aaron motioned for Ola to join her at the front of the group. She pulled the satellite contraption off her back and handed it to him, then pointed to the largest building in the distance. "Set up there and try to reach command," she said. "Les, you and Ty take over the supply crates." Les followed her finger toward a building that was nothing more than a husk, with the exterior peeled away like the skin of an orange, exposing steel girders and a concrete stairwell. He was glad Ola was going, and not he. The overeager militiaman gave a stiff salute and said, "Yes, Commander." They all watched him jog through the snow with his rifle shouldered. As much as he disliked the guy, Les didn't want to see him get killed. So far, they hadn't been able to get any messages through to the Hive, and while Aaron claimed it was normal to lose contact sometimes during a mission, they were counting on Ola to make sure they could reach command. Circling back, Aaron crouched in the snow and brought her wrist monitor up. Les, Ty, and Jennifer bent down to look at the map on the small screen. "We're 1 mile away from the target location," she said, pointing. She sounded nervous. Or maybe that was just the distortion over the comms. Not that Les would blame her if she were. He was pants-pissing scared out here, his thoughts shifting from his family to all the things hiding in the radioactive landscape waiting to feast on his flesh. "Once we enter the facility, we're looking for an underground entrance," Aaron continued. "I'll stay on point until we get there. Keep sharp, and if you see anything, tell me." Aaron moved out, shifting her rifle barrel from window to window. The divers fanned out on the next street, with Les and Ty keeping to the right and Aaron and Jennifer on the left. Jennifer carried a blaster, but Ty was weaponless. As a criminal, he hadn't been entrusted with a weapon. Les really wanted to ask him a few questions, but they hadn't gotten the chance to talk one-on-one, and it didn't look as if that was going to happen any time soon. They entered a tunnel with leaning concrete walls that looked precarious at best. If one of the slabs fell, it would crush them like ants. Aaron studied the concrete beams for a moment before passing underneath. Les squinted to see what lay at the end, but could only vaguely make out a pair of metal doors bent outward. A gust of wind swirled the powdery, poisonous snow around the divers as they made their way through the tunnel. A skeleton lay face down in the snow ahead. Most of the clothing had been stripped away, leaving nothing but a pair of boots on the corpse. Les looked back up at the storm clouds, and then at the street, checking for any contacts that may have flanked them. But he saw only the same cold, dead world in every direction he looked. They came to the end of the passage a few minutes later. Across the street, a sagging structure towered above them. Though decayed from centuries of neglect, it was still impressive. "I think this is it," Aaron said. "Can anyone make out that sign?" Les tried to read the metal sign hanging above the double doors of the entrance. His eyes flitted up the 10-story structure. Black squares where windows had once been dotted the gray exterior. Was that a flash of movement, or were his eyes playing tricks on him? "Tech something," Jennifer said, straining to make out the words. "Industrial Tech Corporation?" "We're here," Aaron said. "Drop the crates on the landing." She moved across the road toward a wide concrete platform at the entrance to the building. The front doors were sealed shut. Les hoped this meant there was nothing nasty inside. He dropped the crates where Aaron had pointed and helped Ty unclip the tow ropes. Aaron brought her wrist monitor up again, letting her rifle sag across her chest armor while she wiped the screen. Radio static crackled over the comms.
"Phoenix 1, this is Phoenix 4. I'm moving into position."
"Roger that," Aaron replied.
We're about to enter the facility. Stand by. She looked back at Ty and Les. This place looks pretty impressive. We'll need to split up. Jennifer, you're with me.
And I guess that makes us buddies, Les said, turning to Ty.
The former technician just stared at the doors of the ITC building. The team advanced up the stairs, and Erin tried the doors. The handle snapped off in her hand, and she dropped it in the snow. She put her shoulder into it, and with the other diver's help, pushed the doors open to reveal a gloomy atrium littered with upended furniture. Erin raked her helmet beam over a mosaic on the high ceiling. Many of the tiles lay scattered on the floor, but enough remained to show that it had once been beautiful. At the end of the room, a desk stood in front of what looked like some sort of artificial waterfall, long since dried up. He couldn't believe that people used to waste good water so foolishly. The divers moved slowly through the room. Erin and Jennifer went left, where two doors led deeper into the building. Les motioned for Ty to follow to the right, where two more doors stood at the other end of the room. Good luck, Erin said. She grabbed the handle of the first door on the left and motioned for Jennifer to cover her. We'll meet back here in 1 hour. Les paused to watch the two divers creep into a stairwell. They angled their weapons up first, then down around another landing, before finally disappearing into the darkness. The door clicked shut behind them, the noise echoing in the open space. Silence quickly replaced it. Les could hear his own breath, loud and quick in his ears. A chill ran up his spine, and he swallowed as he set off for the open doorway at the end of the atrium.
"Hey, buddy," Ty said as they walked.
He wasn't using the comm channel, and Les could barely hear him. The thin technician pointed at the blaster on Les's hip.
"Can I borrow that, just in case we run into trouble?"
After a glance to the holstered weapon, Les shook his head.
"Sorry, man, but we were all told not to give you a gun. You're going to wish you had if we run into those things down here."
"Sirens?" Ty's helmet dipped.
"If that happens, I'll gladly give you my gun. But for now, the answer is no. I don't know you or your story. Now come on."
They continued through the dusty atrium. Les tried to guess what the mosaic used to look like. Blue tiles formed a swirl overhead, a bit like an ocean wave. But that was all he could make out. He stepped on a broken tile, crunching it underfoot, and winced at the noise.
"Pay attention," Ty whispered.
Les kept his eyes to the floor where he saw a red metal can. Several more were spilled around a toppled metal box about as tall as a man. He nudged one of the cans with his foot to reveal the words, "Diet Coke," written on the side.
"What in the heck do you suppose that is?" he asked, not expecting Ty to answer. "Seen those before. One of the divers brought a can like that back to the hive years ago. Some kind of drink."
"You try it?"
"Tasted like battery acid," Ty said.
Les chuckled.
"Guess I'll leave it be then."
"We're moving down a stairwell," Erin said over the comms. "Keep this line open."
"Phoenix 2 copy," Les said.
Ola came online a moment later.
"Almost in position."
The hiss of wind, followed by static, cut him off before he could finish. Les looked back and found Ty crouching near a pillar.
"Looks like tracks," he said, pointing down.
Moving as fast as he quietly could, Les tried to stay calm. His fear quickly gave way to confusion. Ty was right. But the tracks didn't appear to have been left by some mutant monster.
"Looks human to me," Les said. "But how is that possible? I thought they hadn't found a survivor for over a century. Giraffe, or whatever they call you. You should really think hard about handing me that weapon. If someone or something is here, we're going to need it."
Les unbuckled one of the buttons on the holster. He narrowed his eyes before pulling the weapon all the way out, trying to get a look at Ty's features behind his visor. His face was haggard, like that of a man who had seen too much in his life. Les's gut told him Ty was a good man, but he had to be sure. "What happened between you and Captain Jordan?" Les said, holding the grip of the blaster. Ty looked over at the open door of an elevator.
The boot prints led inside, and a frayed rope hung down into the shaft. He shook his head and used the tip of his boot to kick at the ground, clearly frustrated with something.
"Jordan is a liar," Ty said, anger rising in his voice.
He turned back to Les and took a step until he was standing right underneath Les's chin. The beam from Ty's helmet hit the mosaic overhead, and Les saw what it had been. A waterfall, surrounded by trees.
"He's hiding a secret."
"What kind of secret?" Les asked. Ty snorted and tilted his helmet to direct the beam at the boot prints leading to the elevator.
"About a man we left behind years ago. The same man I believe left those tracks."
Les followed the beam, not quite understanding what Ty had just said. He racked his brain to remember all the divers who had been lost over the years. There were so many. And how could any of them survive on the surface? Before he could ask any questions, a crackle sounded over the comms. Ola's frantic voice hissed over the channel.
"Phoenix One! Phoenix One, this is Phoenix Four! I've got the satellite set up, but we've got company! I can see them, but I don't think they know I'm here!"
"Stay where you are and hunker down, Phoenix Four," Aaron said. "Radio silence from here out, everyone, unless you're face-to-face with a hostile." In the background came a noise vaguely like the emergency sirens on the Hive. Les found his hand moving back to the holster. He quickly pulled out the blaster and handed it to Ty.
"Don't make me regret this, man," he said.
"X," Ty said, pointing to the tracks.
"It was Xavier Rodriguez that Jordan left behind on the surface. And I believe those are his prints."
17. 1 year and 9 months earlier. X gunned the motorcycle down the highway. He didn't bother using the night vision optics. His eyes were accustomed to hunting in the dim blue glow of the incessant lightning. Adrenaline rushed through his veins, and the tightness in his throat loosened. For the first time in months, he could breathe through his mouth. He sucked in air through the filter in his helmet, not daring to look over his shoulder at the high-rise he now called home. Doing so would have broken his heart, knowing that Miles was there waiting, pacing, and probably whimpering. Leaving the dog all alone was one of the hardest things X had ever done. It sparked a memory, just a fragment of an image that entered his mind. The moments before a dive in the launch bay of the airship. A boy, with a foil hat, waved at him from the crowd. He had just given X a note, but X could no longer remember the words, only that the memory made him sad. The otherworldly calls of sirens sucked him from his memories. His focus returned to the sky, where the monsters were flying in circles. Something had drawn them out of their nest. It was unusual to see this many in the open air, and he wasn't going to waste this prime opportunity to sneak into ITC Communal 9 and search for the cancer drugs that could save his life. Thunder disguised the sound of his motorcycle as he entered the city. He hoped the beasts wouldn't see him coming. If they did, his rifle was scabbarded to the bike, and his blaster was holstered at his side, both within easy reach. He twisted the throttle, giving the bike more juice as he shot over the raised bridge that would take him into the heart of Miami. Two massive ships were still docked in the harbor to his right. Most of the white paint had been stripped by hurricanes and wind-borne sand over the years, leaving them a grimy rust color. Black slashes like wounds from a whip marked the sides of the hulls where lightning had struck. The largest ship had broken in half, exposing its guts. X steered the bike around a massive chunk of bridge, careful not to snag the blades protruding from his wheel hubs. The beach continued to glow as the plants fought off the sirens. He glimpsed a siren on the horizon flying low over the black ocean, a squirming vine in its talons. Easing off the throttle, he reached for the grip of his rifle with his left hand and continued watching the siren. It flapped to the west and vanished behind a scraper, its wail fading away like a waning klaxon after an emergency. He navigated around several charred vehicles blocking the road ahead. The tires jolted hard over the broken concrete, threatening to twist the handlebars out of his grip. The bridge had taken a real beating over the years. X weaved the bike carefully through a gap between two cars. A skeleton sat in the front seat of the one on his left, skull propped against the steering wheel. In the back, a smaller set of bones lay strapped into a plastic seat.
A child. Just a goddamn kid who never got a chance to live life.
It made him want to scream. Why had humans done this? Why had they destroyed everything? And why the hell was he still alive to see it? He squeezed through the gap, the bladed hub scraping a long gash in the rusted metal. Finally clear of obstacles, he gunned the bike down the final stretch of road, accelerating hard enough to bring the front tire off the ground for a second. It reconnected with a jolt, and X sped toward the buildings along the shore. He approached the fishing ship that had gotten wedged between two buildings. Chipped red paint still coated the stern, but the rest of the hull was the same burnt flesh color as the rest of the city. He drove at 20 miles per hour, eyes flitting from the road and buildings to the sky. He had studied the sirens closely during his time in hell. The males seemed to be the ones with wings, while the females typically stayed on the ground or by the nests. They weren't the only threats out here, though. Giant snakes and fish prowled the waters, and monster lizards came out of their lairs from time to time to hunt smaller bird-like beasts. There were also the poisonous plants and trees that had sprouted roots inside the city. Here and there, cockroaches the size of a man's hand scuttled between cracks and piles of debris. Miami was the most active ecosystem X had ever seen in his years on the surface. Even the ship dry-docked against the two buildings had sprouted a colorful garden of foliage from the hole in its hull. No doubt the plant would be poisonous or have acidic sap, making it as deadly as everything else down here. X couldn't help but feel the weight of being the only man in the mutated wasteland. In the past, this feeling of loneliness had consumed him, broken him even. But not today. Perhaps it was adrenaline, or perhaps it was his finally accepting that the people in the sky were never coming back, that he would never see another human.
"It's just me," he thought. "I'm the only one who will ever see this. And I'll never get to tell anyone."
He roared through the streets, feeling free for the first time in years. His heart raced as the speedometer steadily ticked up. The oversized tires navigated the cracked terrain nicely, and the suspension made the potholes barely noticeable. It felt like flying. The wail of a siren rose over the thunder, snapping him back into survival mode. He considered reaching for a weapon, but kept his hands on the bars when he saw the beast flap around the side of a building. So far, the noise of his bike hadn't attracted the beasts. They seemed focused on something else. But what had drawn them all out of their dens? X hadn't seen anything that might interest them besides the flashing trees on the beach. That was the only explanation. He checked the minimap in his HUD. ITC Communal 9 was 2 blocks away. Looking to the road, he saw that it was flooded about a quarter mile away. He steered left onto the next street and drove under two buildings that leaned against one another like men too drunk to stand on their own. A huge section of one had crashed to the street, blocking the route. X cursed and wheeled around, back onto the main road, and went left at the next intersection. He couldn't see beyond the arched bridge, but the facility was somewhere on the other side. Twisting the throttle, he zoomed up the ramp. The first injection was already starting to wane. His eyelids felt heavier, and his heartbeat had returned to normal. Pain ripped through his tightening throat. He sucked in air through his nose and focused on the top of the bridge. As soon as he was over it, he would stop and give himself another shot of adrenaline. His eyes teared up as he increased the bike speed. The wide tires thumped over a crack in the road right before he crested the top.
Shit!
The cry of shock came when he saw a flash of motion barreling up from the other side. He swerved to miss a siren bolting up the road. The sharp veer almost cost him control of the bike, but he managed to straighten out, the rear tire chirping before regaining traction. He threw on the brakes, and in a swift movement, pulled his blaster. Twisting in the seat, he fired a shot that took off a piece of the monster's head in a spray of bone and gore. He holstered the gun, and then turned back to the downward slope, where 2 dozen of the female beasts were making their way up the road on all fours. All at once, their infernal cries blasted X with a barrage of high-pitched electronic noise. Instead of retreating and pulling his rifle, He turned the throttle to give the bike more juice. The rear tire fishtailed with a screech, and the bike lurched down the road to meet the monsters head-on. The foot-long blades welded to